The Party in the Back podcast is brought to you by the store at GameOps.com, the home of game operations tools and toys like prize chutes, chuck-a-pucks, t-shirt launchers, and confetti. Make your show scream with everything you need. Available now at thestore.gameops.com.
Welcome to the Party in the Back podcast. I'm your host, John Kudo. If sports marketing was a mullet, the business in the front would be forecasting budgets and measuring ROI, but the party in the back of that mullet would be slimed scoreboards, ectoplasma-covered mascots, and making fans wonder, who are you going to call? And we're here for that fun side of the sports marketing on the Party in the Back podcast. This month, we party with our friends Scott Sproat and John Long. They share an affiliation with the Edmonton Oilers, and they both have executed strong Ghostbuster nights for their fans in Fort Wayne and Edmonton, respectively, this year. We talk about those promotions, the creative processing, licensing, and a lot more in the April edition of the Party in the Back podcast. Don't forget to check out the homepage at GameOps.com this month for content like Super Ken Solomon sitting down with John Nunez, who is the former embodiment of the iconic Benny the Bull, on the Between the Fur podcast. John was Benny the Bull for 8 years, and they talk about his secret retirement last year and much more. Check that out. Plus, Build El Burrito is back in stock in our store. We have information on Bam Bams and protective gear in our resources page as well. Plus, this has been one of the lost recordings from our old Huddle Call series. I found it and finally reposted it, and it's awesome. It's all things audio, including finding prompts, keeping them fresh, how to use them, how long to keep them, and how to keep your fans happy in the audio world. Cleveland Cavaliers and Guardians music operator Josh Sable, plus Sonic storyteller Jake Wagner, lead the discussion along with a jolt of energy from our friend Johnny Greco. It is, again, that long-lost recording from our Huddle Call series on audio. Check that out. But now, let's get this party started with John Long and Scott Sproat. All right, so for the April 2024 edition of the Party in the Back podcast, we have two guests. One's never enough. Actually, I shouldn't say that because one has always been enough. And I've just been yearning to mix it up and get a couple people on. And I found a subject where I'm like, this is going to be perfect. A couple guys. And I found out last night, they actually are affiliated with the same team, the Edmonton Oilers, their teams are affiliated. So we have two guests. First, we have John Long, who's the manager of event presentation and creative content with the Edmonton Oil Kings. John, you may have recognized his name. He was a guest of ours on the podcast here when he was with the Newfoundland Growlers. He had a great story about his friend Chris Abbott, who tragically passed away, but how they honored him as Buddy the Puffin. It is a great listen. I highly recommend that. He's now with the Edmonton Oil Kings. He flagged an event on his Twitter feed, or his Instagram feed, which I follow, of course, about Ghostbusters night. And I've been looking to talk about this forever. So he spurned the idea. So welcome, John Long.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here to talk about some fun stuff we've been having here on the West Coast.
Exactly. Well, it is great to have you back. And my second guest, who I actually looked this up, Scott, is Scott Sproat. He's the president of business operations, a co-owner of the Fort Wayne Comets in the ECHL, obviously affiliate of the Edmonton Oilers. Scott and I have known each other since 1989, if that's even possible. One of my oldest business friends, one of my oldest friends, you can see from it. I'm going to get a screenshot of your gray beard. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Please don't hold it against me that I've known Kudo that long and still choose to talk to him. Although I will say this is the first time he's ever had me on a podcast, even though he's asked me to consult on pretty much everything he's ever done in his life. So there you are.
Those are all true statements. I will say, too, for someone who's on a podcast for 15 years or so, 12, 15, 13, somewhere in there, not having you on yet is absolutely abominable. And I am embarrassed and ashamed. And I think it's kind of like you're the guy who could probably talk on any of these topics. And so as I roam around, it's always like, I could have Scott. Well, I could always have Scott for that, or I could have Scott for the next one.
Sure. Well, so, I do have a face for radio, so
you do, absolutely. There is that. Yeah. Absolutely, that's why we're not recording the video component of this. So guys, we're and actually, I should note how John and Scott actually haven't met before today. But as I talked to John, I was like, I wanted to get this second guest thing going. And I'm like, has anybody else done Ghostbusters Night that you've seen that you kind of look to as you put yours together? And he's like, of course, the Fort Wayne Commons. And I'm like, you know what? I think I can get Scott Sproat to be on the podcast.
I know a guy. Yeah,
I do know a guy. So John, let's start with you. You just had your Ghostbusters Night. Is that correct?
Yeah, we March 2nd.
March 2nd. So it's recent. It's fresh in your memories. Let's start with when you have these movie theme nights, what's the first step in connecting with the studio or the rights owners and those kind of things? What's that first step and how does that process work?
It differs depending, because I know in my time with the ECHL, we did a lot of Nickelodeon nights. We did Star Wars nights and stuff like that. With the Ghostbuster one itself, I didn't really have any much connection to the studios, but generally how it will go is you reach out, you kind of say what you're doing, and then they give you some contracts and some stuff to follow, and then you kind of stay within their guidelines. Some are a little bit more strict than others, and some allow you to have creative freedom, but at the same time, they want to protect their branding. So it's always been a delicate dance to make sure you're not infringing. But really, it comes down to this: a lot of emails and making sure we're dotting I's and crossing T's.
Exactly. And Scott, similar experience?
Yeah. We will admittedly seek out licensees that are either more affordable or in some cases not needed to be worried about at all. And you want to do your due diligence on that, okay? Because the last thing you want, when we do the theme nights, we always tie them to a charity and we do a game-worn jersey auction with all those net proceeds going to the charity. So the last thing you would ever want is to put a nonprofit partner of yours in your community in a position where they could get a cease and desist letter or something like that. So you definitely want to research it. Our league, the ECHL, is tremendously good at supporting their teams, and they usually send you so many things that you can do through them that, like us here at Fort Wayne that have been doing this a long time, we're like, would you go away, please? You know, that's too much. We're not doing all that crap. But they're good at helping with that. And there's a team services division, and they do a lot of that legwork for you. The second way, and this is usually the down and dirty way I prefer to do it, is we work with preferred vendors, jersey companies that produce our jerseys, and they will know ahead of time if they're able to do a particular property licensing without a fee or with a fee or what that fee is. So in our case, we work on our theme nights almost exclusively with OT Sports Jersey Company. And Kyle Ward there is a good friend of mine, and he's fantastic. And if I send him an idea, he will immediately put his people on researching it and making sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed so that I don't have to do it, quite frankly. The way I look at it, they're going to make, you know, a nice chunk of change for producing a set of jerseys for me. And there's so many options that John would, you know, agree on. So many options out there for jersey companies you can work with that Kyle appreciates the business. So they do a lot of that due diligence for me.
Well, let's start there. I know that's always a big component, the jersey theme nights. You know, how much you mentioned that OT Sports has a creative kind of component to it. Would they help with that? What's been your process? Let's start with you, John Long, with creating the jerseys for that. And also I want to get in a little bit if you've done jerseys for both teams.
Yeah. So with this, with Ghostbusters Night, we actually didn't do a theme jersey, but I think similar, we did a SpongeBob jersey this year. And we did one back in Newfoundland as well. We actually did a SpongeBob jersey. It was a funny story about this. I'm sitting down in the office of my business operation director, and he's showing me samples, and he's showing me all these ECHL teams. And he's like, what do you think of this one? And it was the Newfoundland Growlers one that we designed in like 4 years ago. And I'm like, if we use that, they're going to think I stole the idea and brought it here. but it has changed slightly. Sometimes I found that there was a lot more you know, liberties. Like they, you could make more alterations, you can make more changes. And I found recently it's a little bit more stock. Like here's our 10 designs. You can have this, and here's the slight alterations. Generally, a logo patch, a sponsor patch, you know, a community patch. A lot of the jerseys here in with the Oil Kings, we do a jersey raffle and auction for all of our jerseys, and all that usually. Actually, this whole season, all of that has been connected to a charity. So, but yeah, when it comes to like, when it comes to designing, a lot of it comes down to the individual companies and the, and what they give you. Sometimes it's stock, and sometimes they're like, go for it.
Nice. And does that matter a little bit too with the movie that you're working with and the brand, Scott?
100%. And we differ a little bit from John's process in that we don't like to do anything that you could have seen somewhere else. The only time we'll make an exception on that is if the brand is strong enough that we want to work with that particular property and they require you to pick either A, B, C, D, or E. You know, for example, Marvel is very much that way. If you want to do a Marvel superhero, you pretty much will be given option A, B, or C, and that's it. So that's all you can do. And then you just tag your logo on it somewhere, and it's very standardized. For example, I don't know if you can see it, but in the background back there, there's a Batman jersey. We did a Batman theme night, and they only give you two options. So it's either this or that, and you put your logo on it. That's another big deciding factor for us. I prefer not to work with any properties where they tell us what we have to design. I have an unbelievable graphics guy here. He's extremely talented, extremely creative, and he comes up with original designs for almost anything we do, which we did with Ghostbusters. OT checked on everything for us, made sure everything was okay, and we were able to make our own design, which I can send you, obviously. Of the Ghostbusters themed jersey. And so that's what we prefer, but that's just personal preference. We've been here for 72 years. So we have to keep things as fresh as possible because there's only so many ways you can make an orange saw blade with a word through it look, especially when it's been around as long as ours has. So that's why we really look at our theme nights as a way to provide options for our fans that aren't there in the typical designs that we're able to get away with.
And real quick, I think this isn't super specific to game presentation, but it's relevant to the jerseys and the auctions. Are you guys both using the same app to do that, or you guys do the in-house? I want to say Dash is the name of the app.
John, go ahead. I have experience with Dash from the coast, and that seemed to go well. The only real issues that ever came up with is almost if you had an oversaturation of jerseys. Right, when there's too many themed jerseys going, but we did use Dash. But here in Edmonton, we're actually doing it all in-house.
Oh, you do the auctions in-house?
Yeah, we do a combination silent auction and raffle.
Oh, nice!
A really cool idea once again from our business director Kevin Rudomski. So people can buy a raffle ticket for $5, or they can buy so many for $20, and then they can kind of pick the players they want, so they can get in on it without having to spend, you know, most of the time these jerseys go for 200 plus up. So for $20, you have a chance, and it's been going really well for us here.
John, do you piggyback on Edmonton's nonprofit licensing then, or is it Canada different? Because like,
no, I can't speak to it too good, but we're two organizations, so I'm sure there's support there, but we don't piggyback. I believe we have our own.
Okay. Yeah. Cause we don't ever do anything with a raffle because the state of Indiana is extremely stringent. So you have to have a separate nonprofit charity license, raffle license, in order to be able to conduct a raffle if there's prize, chance, and consideration. So we do our own. I'm a big believer in, I would rather have 100% of the net proceeds go to the charity that I'm working with locally rather than Dash getting 25% of that number, simply because they have a slick app, but that's just personal preferences. So we do it ourselves so that we can maintain as much of the proceeds as possible to end up going to the cause that we're representing to start with.
And you see that? That's what I love right here is that you ask the next question, Scott. I can just bow out and you guys can chat for a while. It gets even better.
Oh, you're still here? I'm sorry. We forgot you were here.
Let's dig in a little bit to Ghostbusters specifically. And what I'm really curious on this is when you lead into the creative elements that you did, whether it be contests or music, those kind of things in the concourse, who's leading that creative charge and how are you processing like what you see in the movie and what you may be able to lean into? And sometimes obviously it's just what you've seen done around, but what's talk a little bit about that creative process. Scott, you want to start on this one?
Yeah. We believe in a team effort when it comes to that. So obviously our graphic designer, who also handles all our social media, he's going to be integral in the promotion of the event and also making sure that the social aspect ties in, which is going to be your primary, you know, freeway of promoting that you're doing the night. And then we tie in our other creative aspects, our video board production guy, so that he can tie in some of the video elements. For example, we did a, you know, I've been slimed, you know, who are you going to call, kind of pre-video with some of our players to promote the event, ran that on social, and then also as part of our opener that night. And then, you know how fortunate we are here in Fort Wayne to have an unbelievable mascot that we've had for, you know, almost 30 years now. And so we involved the mascot too, because ultimately a lot of the fun stuff that you do on game night is going to come down to what your mascot's willing to do. And I was trained, you know, early in my career by this guy I knew named John Kudo, I think, something like that, that the mascot element can be either a throwaway, stand in the lobby and wave to kids and, you know, take a couple pictures, or it can be absolutely integral to everything you do. And I think, you know, the Timberwolves and Crunch were a perfect example of that back when it wasn't common for that to happen. And I've carried that philosophy forth. So we involve the mascot a lot because he's the one we're going to put the proton pack on. He's the one that's going to be walking around acting like he's shooting, you know, a proton pack, but it's going to be confetti and on and on and on. So, and then he, you know, managed to dress up a couple of his underlings as slimers and chase them around and, you know, drop some slime and everything. So that's the way we go. We try to involve everybody that it's going to touch and then get them all in a room and kind of come up with it. But then at the end of the day, I'm probably the most sick and twisted one of all of them. And I'm probably the only one that was alive when the original Ghostbusters was made. So I probably overrode them on this one in particular. But then let's say they do something like, I don't know, there's this Bluey character going around now. I couldn't even tell you who the hell that is. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think we kind of work together and just make it fit.
Love it. And John?
Yeah, so for us, like we knew we were doing this night back in June, July. So it was on. You sleep on it for a few weeks, few months. Let the creative juices fly. I'm a huge fan of Ghostbusters, so I might have watched the first movie about 3 or 4 times just this year, just to get some inspiration. So that's I looked at.
I'm at 34 times, by the way.
That's amazing. I have to catch up. So yeah. And then the creative process, you know, as the season goes, you know, you're still not a triage, but you're kind of like, you're treating each game as it comes and doing creative and new ideas hit. And this one, by the time we really started to figure out what we wanted to do, we knew we wanted to include. So a cool tip about, or a cool fact about Ghostbusters is the new movie is actually shot here in Alberta. Which also Alberta has a big collection or a big group of cosplayers that dress up. They're called the Alberta Ghostbusters. And then after talking to them, that kind of filled in our creative juices. And we really wanted to stick to something that was like a tribute to the movie, but not I love the idea of slime, but we didn't go anything there. We kind of wanted the Ghostbusters to be there, and we had about 20 of them. And then we built our creative based on them. We did some stuff based on what they were bringing and who they were coming out with. And them themselves coming out with full-on replica proton packs was quite a sight. And then we just did supporting graphics throughout the building.
I love it. That's actually the one thing on Ghostbusters. I saw a couple years ago, one of those groups where they, you know, again, the Star Wars characters are everywhere and the 501st. But yep. You get to the point where I'm like, what's the next movie like that? And like Ghostbusters is the one where I've seen a Ghostbusters locally here in Cleveland. There's a Ghostbusters car that drives around. So there's people who do this, like you said, the cosplayers who are such a huge part of Star Wars night. And to me, it's like tapping into them is so critical. And you did have some of them at their game?
Yeah, we had about 20 of them all together. So they were involved in the puck drop. We did a little puck drop ceremony with them. which was cute because we also had a scout out there to drop the puck. So all of a sudden this little kid was out there, and then this guy in a giant proton pack comes out. We do that. And then, so they were going around, and they have a similar mantra to us here, which is, you know, everything they do is for the community. So like they had a table set up, they were selling things for donation, and they give that back to the Stollery here in Edmonton. So, our values aligned, and then, they were just really great people. And, they made the show work no matter how many graphics or prompts we were done. If they weren't there, I don't think it would have worked.
Yeah. Scott, can you compare that or contrast that? And first of all, did you have any of the cosplayers at your event?
I by chance knew a guy who had a Ecto-1 car, Ghostbusters car. So we parked that out front, and he and his wife and kid, they've kind of become cosplayers a little bit because they have the car. I don't know what the original inspiration was. But so we had them at the game, but there's no local chapter here in Fort Wayne. Fort Wayne's usually about 20 years behind the time. So whenever something's a fad in the rest of the world, about 20 years from now, it'll be a fad here in Fort Wayne. So I think the original movie was released last March, maybe, here in Fort Wayne, because it's that far behind. No, I'm joking, but no. So there wasn't as much of that here. So we kind of always try to, you know, work with that. And I mean, you mentioned what other cults are out there. I mean, Star Trek, you know, has the similar following to Star Wars for sure. And, you know, you learn over time, you know, sort of what is out there. You know, we have big success with our Princess Night only because there are princesses in today's world walking around. There's a Miss Indiana, a Miss Allen County, a Miss Fort Wayne, a Miss Indiana teenager, a Miss, you know, on and on and on. And they need to make appearances for their commitments anyway, so we can get all those people. So we're also fortunate too. We've got a company in town called Tag Art, and they actually dress up for a living, so to speak. They have dinosaurs, so they do Jurassic Park nights. They have Disney characters, so they do Disney nights. They have all these different characters. So if we tell them, hey, we want you to do, you know, this, they will generally adapt it and then just put it in part of their product offering. Troy, the guy that owns the place, always tells us that about 50% of what they do on a recurring basis for their appearances and their in their characters come from what they do at a comic game first that they develop for us, and then they just continue it on. So it's just about, it's effort, you know, it's like anything else. And John, you know, John Long obviously gets it too, I can tell. Most of these teams just think, oh, we'll do this jersey night, and then that's it, and they stop. And ultimately, that doesn't get people that jazzed. You have to go the next step and do the little things so that when they leave, they're like, wow, that was a cool night. That was a cool theme night. Otherwise, as soon as a team comes out for the first time and you see them wearing the jerseys, that's your night. Mm-hmm. That's it. And that's not enough. You got to do more.
Well, how's that compare with a night where maybe you can't tap into or there's nothing natural? Like, I know you've done a Ace Ventura night, Pet Detective, yeah. And there's probably not cosplayers who do that. Maybe there are, I don't know. But how does that, what's the difference look like in terms of the fan engagement when you can't tap into someone?
Video board is sort of the way to go. Because with video board elements, then you can grab different things. So with Ace Ventura, we did a lot of, one of the big things we did with Ace Ventura is we, alrighty then. And, you know, those kind of things, we had some of our fans do the imitations and put them up on the video board. And some of our fans are different birds. So it was definitely entertaining to watch some of that. And then you use clips from the movie and everything else. You want to make sure again that you've got rights to do all that. So you want to have the right protective policy. Again, the ECHL is tremendous. And John from his time in the ECHL can tell you, they require you to have all the licensing necessary so that you're going to pretty much be able to use anything. The only exception is you can't use the word Zamboni or the logo from a Zamboni. They'll go after you. But pretty much everything else, you know, is covered. So you're safe to use it that way. So if you can't create it in 3D, old school with bodies and costumes and people and props, then you can always go the video board route and sort of tie it in that way.
And Scott, I don't want to give it up because it's maybe our best idea ever, but Tony Zamboni is
100%
the pinnacle of our working creative work together. Would never happen. It's sitting out there. We own all the trademarks and copyrights. Actually, we don't, but that's our best idea, just so you know.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. It's an Italian guy that would ride on top of the.
No, don't out us. Don't tell us.
Okay.
It's still in the works. It still could happen.
I have a free game next week.
I'm cutting this whole thing out so nobody can sniff this thing.
Yeah, you should.
New theme night.
Bill Veeck said, "It isn't enough for a promotion to be entertaining or even amusing. It must create conversation. We follow that conversation at the GameMops.com water cooler. Monday through Friday, look at a moment created by a sports team and see how it got fans talking. These daily posts are a great way to kickstart some creative thinking for your own show. Look for the Water Cooler text scroll on our homepage or follow us on Twitter for the daily update."
John, same question. Is there anything that you did that overcame if you didn't have those resources to tap into with cosplay and that kind of thing?
Yeah, certainly. One of the things we were toying around with at the beginning was using the Ecto-1 siren as our goal horn that night. Cool. That kind of element, the creative process is fun. So when we tested out in the building, we have a beautiful sound system. I did not like how it sounded. I was like, this will get a little annoying if a few goals go in. So one of the things we did is we actually just changed the goal song to the Ghostbuster theme that night. And then hope for forgiveness. We did win the game 4-1, so we were fine. but the song also lent to its own call to action. You know, so we had 9,000 plus in the building that night. It was quite loud. Some of the other stuff we did, music throughout the night, was from the movie itself. Rather, when you walked in, it was the score from Ghostbusters to some of the sound cues, like Slimer or the screams during a Get Loud, stuff like that. One of the things, Scott, I love using sound in a building when you can't use a video board, right? Yeah. When, you know, you're still on live and people can still react to it. And then some of the other stuff, we took some clips from the movies as crowd prompts, right? So some of the jump scares in the original movie, we use those to throw into a noise prompt for the crowd. And then throughout the night, we had green lighting and we did certain little things. But yeah, a video board definitely helps carry that. If not, if you can't find a group, it's the best thing you have in the building. And it really, if the fans are looking, then they're going to react.
And John, did you do some screen projection as well?
Screen, not for this one, but with the way the lighting was on the ice, it probably looked like it a little bit. And I had a look, so it looked like slime was coming down, covering up the whole thing and the proton beams. So we tried to make it like a little bit of a look, and then animated some Ecto-1 driving around and some little elements. But I think that's what you might have seen. It wasn't an ice projection, but it was when you came in, you knew it was Ghostbusters.
Nice. You know, one question I have about these theme nights, and I always think of this as the X-Files or the South Park or the Simpsons movies, where if you went to the X-Files movie, what they do is they kind of start over. If you don't know who those characters are, they're telling you. And they're doing it in a way that's not going to embarrass somebody who's totally vested in the show. But they're giving you the clues and they're giving you the backstory and they're setting up those characters so you can follow the movie even if you weren't fans of the TV show. And in that case, like that, if you come to this game, obviously, like Scott talked about, you want this to be overpowering. You want this theme to be everywhere, all-encompassing, characters walking around, scoreboard prompts, clips, music, sound, everything. But if you don't know what Ghostbusters and you just bought a ticket because this is the night you could come, are you guys connecting those dots or are you not worried about that? Scott, why don't you start with this one?
Well, you know, again, we're a different beast a little bit because we've been here so long. So I'll be honest with you, a lot of our diehard, longtime fans hate the theme nights. Like, that's one of the complaints we'll get on season surveys and things from fans. I wish you guys would stop doing those damn theme nights. I just want to come look at the fireball on the jersey and have a normal hockey game, blah, blah, blah. It's no different than anything else. If you're a hardcore hockey fan, you're going to come watch the game. You're going to ignore that stuff because you don't care about it anyway. The idea is to draw fans that wouldn't normally be there and that wouldn't normally be invested in your brand. And then you have an opportunity with the other things you do during the course of the night to get them engaged or invested in your brand. So the way I look at it, it's no different than anything else out there. Why does a car dealer do an April Fool's Day sale or a July 4th sale or anything else? Why do candy bars do tie-ins to movies? Why do anything online that does a, you know, da-da-da, here's our Prius 19, you know, gallon, miles to the gallon electric vehicle, and don't miss Ghostbusters that comes out on April 27th. I mean, it's no different than that. What you're doing is you're attaching your brand to a brand that you feel like, at least in that moment, in a perfect world for one night, is a bigger, bolder, better, or just different contrasting brand with your own. If all you're doing all the time is promoting your old brand, then be prepared to lose season ticket holders to death and taxes if they can't afford their seats anymore, or if they die after being a season ticket holder for 40 years, because you're never going to attract anybody new, and you're certainly not going to attract anybody younger or anybody of a different demo. So we look at it specifically as an opportunity to bring in those people who do know about Ghostbusters. And if you don't know about Ghostbusters and you're at the game, I got you anyway. You're already somebody who's coming to a hockey game in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and there's not a hell of a lot of options beyond the comments. So bottom line is, you just don't worry about that, at least in my opinion.
Good stuff. John?
Yeah, the inside joke, I think, is always a little bit like in the back of my head that, you know, does anyone get what we're trying to do here? I'll speak to another night we did called Wrestling Night, where we had live wrestling. So two audiences that are similar but very different came into that building. And one of the songs we played was Kurt Angle's music. And if anyone's aware of what that, there you go. The call to action to that is, maybe two words that say you suck. And possibly during a bad call, the camera might have been on a certain person. It worked that night very well. We did try it a couple more times back on the other building. It did work, but we did it. I found when we tried it a couple more times on different games, it did not work as well. Right. Sometimes you do get that inside joke where your audiences are different. And I do find here in Edmonton, especially with the Oil Kings, it's a very younger demographic. We are like families and kids, right? There's the Oilers got the party and adult crowd covered. So the inside joke came, but my big thing is I'm looking for reactions. All right. I'm looking for, you know, does that make you smile? Does that make you laugh? So a method to my madness is sometimes if I feel like it's not going to hit, I'll send it around to everyone I know and, or show someone, and I'll just watch and hear the reaction and go, okay, they smiled. There's something to it. Main thing is I think comedy and hilariousness is universal. So if I can get you to smile, then I know it's going to work.
That's awesome. He's in the right room with the whole wrestling.
You got the wrestling stuff.
Team stuff, isn't he? Yeah.
I got to tell you, I was at a Lake Erie, or a Cleveland Monsters game, and they have a player named, I don't know his first name, his last name is Angle, and I'm like, why are you not playing this song? That's just because I know. I'm in. You know, you know. Let's talk a little bit about social media in context of Ghostbusters Night. Anything in particular that you guys did or saw that you thought was successful that people should know about? John?
Social media is handled here by a great person named Katie Harding. She does an amazing job. She tweeted out some cool stuff that night and got some hits. But really, it was just the consistency of telling people what's happening, right, and what to expect a little bit. People were questioning this game a little bit online because they weren't sure what it was going to be. We never done a Ghostbuster night. There was no jersey attached to it. So they were like, what is this? And she did a great job informing the crowd and then informing, you know, fans like that. But on the social media side, it was just this, we kept it so that people were intrigued. So they want to see what's in Pandora's box.
That's interesting. I like that. Just what to expect. Scott, how'd you guys deal with it there?
Again, original content. You know, we produced a video that we used and it told the story. In other words, it took players that fans, at least in theory, should have been familiar with already, and put them in the role where, you know, they were uttering lines like "he slimed me" or "we came, we saw," you know, the classic stuff. And then obviously treating it like they were bird busting, not the ghost busting. We actually sort of entertained for a while. The logo that we did on the jersey was a knockoff of the Ghostbusters logo, but we replaced the ghost with Icy. And so that was what we used. So we toyed with doing the whole Bird Busters thing and sort of going to the zoo and the aviary and doing all that. But we sort of backed off that and just went more traditional Ghostbusters at the end. But again, the key is just give them something new. Again, I'm a big believer in originality. I'm a big believer in original content. If all you're doing is regurgitating what's out there, I have a pretty simple saying when it comes to our world now in terms of trying to put something out there in front of fans at a hockey game or a basketball game or anything else. There's YouTube, ladies and gentlemen. There's TikTok, ladies and gentlemen. You're really not going to give them anything they haven't seen before, okay? And you're not going to give them anything as good as these people that are spending millions of dollars with tens of millions of followers on YouTube. You can't compete with that. There's just no way. So you have to come up with original ideas that allow you to tie into the theme, tie into the logo, tie into the branding, but do it in a way that it still speaks to the hockey fan, the Comet hockey fan, or the Fort Wayne, Indiana resident. So, for example, we did a Ghostbuster spiel where it's cold in Indiana in October. There's no getting around it. So, you know, you walked outside and screw the ghost, it's cold out here, you know, sort of thing. So we do things that our crowd and our fans and our people can relate to. It's like John said earlier, or you said earlier, people who know Ghostbusters, you don't need to show them Ghostbusters. You know, their clips, their sounds, their logos, they know what's going on. So it's more about how do we engage everyone across the brand. And if you don't know Ghostbusters, can we create something original that we can put out there that'll get your attention? So we tie it back to our people, our stuff. And again, we're extremely fortunate. We have Icy. We can pretty much put Icy in any role, whether it's, you know, from here to eternity, laying on a beach, kissing a girl, you know, or if it's, you know, with a proton pack on his back, shooting a ghost, or if it's getting him shot as if he was a ghost. So, you know, and that helps build your mascot's brand too. All of a sudden your people say, oh, he's not just a mascot that waves and waves at the crowd. Hey, everybody, you know, so you make him a character too. So to us, it's branding across the board and it works all three dimensions.
Such a great example of Icy. I love Icy is one of the best minor league hockey characters. One of the best minor league characters there is. And I love how every single promotion you guys do, it's almost like the first question is, how does Icy fit into this? 100%. And if you look at the Comets social media, if you look at anything that they do, if you go to a game, you can tell that that's the centerpiece of what they do. And it's, and that Icy is a huge brand in Fort Wayne, and it's really a testament to the work you guys have done there. Is there anything that you guys did in terms of in-game contests that tied into Ghostbusters or busting ghosts and those kind of things, or that you thought about trying?
John, we were going to try to do the bubbling. I'll go first and then get out of the way. We were going to try to do the bubbling thing where you yelled at it and it bubbled up, you know, and figure out a way to do a contest, but we couldn't pull it off. So we sort of abandoned it. So we basically just did the proton pack stuff and the skits. We did consider doing like busting up a statue or, you know, doing a, but really the impressions that we had our fans do, you know, we had them do the Harold Ramis part, the whatever, the, you know, the Gozer, oh, I'm gonna go, you know, so we did the imitations and stuff like we did with the Ace Ventura stuff. And that's where we kind of stopped, but we entertained it. But, you know, then again, you've been to games at Fort Wayne, John, you know, I got so much sponsor stuff. It's hard for me to find the time to do those kind of things.
That is true. It's a crowded show, but that's good. John, how about you?
First off, that's a good complaint to have when you have too much sponsor stuff, I think. I've been in both boats where I'm like, I got to keep coming up with ideas. Oh, no. To the point of, oh, and here, same thing. I kind of the same challenge here. We are loaded up with sponsored stuff. So you're trying to figure out, can I make that a Ghostbuster theme? One of the ones we did, actually, was we had a company here that was a recycling company. And basically, they had a trivia that was add up. The point of it was to add up the cans to a certain price, right? What you would get back in recycling. So I customized it so it was all the old drink. What was it? High C is what it's called. With the Ghostbuster theming. So all the cans and bottles on it were Ghostbuster High C from the 80s. So that was one I was able to kind of infuse a little bit of Ghostbusters, a small tidbit, but a lot of it was using the perform or the cosplayers in our t-shirt tosses, in the spots themselves. We did at the top of show try to do the at the beginning of the first movie. Venkman is doing the card test with two people and he's shocking one while hitting on the other one. That's good. So we did do that one. I'm not sure how it executed as well, but it was fun. The fans did react. But because we had it rigged, we had it you know, curtained down. The hosts knew exactly what cards were coming up, and every time he would get one wrong, even though the fans could see he got it right, we would still shock him or shock him. Some of the other stuff, my host and my, I'm blessed here to have some talented people, and my PA alone added a lot of ad lib to his reads, that were Ghostbuster themed. He's amazing at it, and same with my host. So that's kind of how we did it. We also did a dancing toaster spot, where we literally had the toaster from the movie. And they did actually have a dancing toaster. Unfortunately, live event happened. The dancing toaster didn't show up to the spot. Next year we'll get it. But we had an animation, so we had a dance cam with a dancing toaster. It was great.
I love it.
Yeah, well, part of it's not overthinking it too. I mean, we put the ghost trap out at center ice for Chuck-a-Puck. So your normal target was replaced with the ghost trap.
Love that.
Now nobody's gonna get it. Nobody's gonna throw it in to the ghost trap, but who gives a shit? Closest puck wins. You know, so it's sometimes about not overthinking it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I love that. I might have to use that next.
Yeah, so many people steal my ideas, and kudos are usually the source of how they find it and steal it. So go ahead. You're right.
No problem. Appreciate it.
It's why we're here. Well, John and Scott, this has been a great conversation about Ghostbusters Night and how that also extends into other movie themes as well. How to check those leads with the movie studios and rights holders, and like you said, get those that help from your league office, and then all the little pieces that make it all come to life. I do appreciate all you guys, your insights and your expertise here. You guys have put together two of the highlight Ghostbuster nights this year, and I appreciate you sharing those insights as to what worked, why, and what might have not worked at all. But I appreciate your insights, and thanks for coming on and sharing some of those stories. I hope you will check out the water cooler this month on GameOps.com. It's our daily look at something that got people talking. Bill Veeck told us that is the sweet spot. Give people the joy of being part of something that they're going to want to tell others about. Plus, it's free marketing for you. In March, we looked at the NHL Islanders and a really cool use of technology. It's never about the toys you have, but it's what you do with it. And the Islanders are doing something really cool with their screen projection. We looked at Swifties Night from the Reading Fightings, a really clever match-starting tradition from the Chicago Fire. That is one of my favorites. A lot of teams have these new traditions that they use to launch the energy in their arena and in their stadium. The Chicago Fire from the MLS have a great one. And no month at the water cooler is complete without some chaos from Gritty in Philadelphia. Click on that water cooler on any page on GameOps.com to see what people are talking about. We also use those posts to link through to more articles, interviews, content, and related fun on GameOps.com, so it is a great place to start. That is a wrap for the April 2020 edition of the Party in the Back podcast on GameOps.com. Thank you for listening. Next month, we start our 14th year of podcasting since May 2011. It's been on GameOps.com. It was the GameOps.com podcast. It was renamed in June of 2019 as the Party in the Back podcast, but you can come here every month and check out what's going on. Big thanks to everyone who listens, reads, and supports us here at GameOps.com. Thanks for spreading the word about the podcast, which just keeps on growing. Join us again next month with the Party in the Back with more talk and analysis about that fun side of sports marketing. For my guests, Scott Sproat and John Long, shouts out to Carrie Samick, Courtney Spellacy, and Mark Grant. This is John Kudo signing off, but please, let's keep the party going.
Thanks for joining us on the Party in the Back podcast. We'll see you next time.